This episode of Creative Honey is brought to you by Type Ed. If you ever feel like your type skills could be a bit better, or if you want to just learn more about type, you should definitely check out Type 1. Type 1 is an online typography course taught by Type Ed, where you'll learn how to work with the fundamentals of type and the grid. It'll help you feel confident in your choices, whether you're working in print, digital, motion, or brand identity design. Take Type 1 at your own pace, and then join Type Ed for monthly Q&A calls as part of their alumni community. As a Creative Honey listener, you can save 25% off of the tuition by going to creativehoney.org/type-ed. That's creativehoney.org/type-ed. This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Creative Honey episode. This is Zach and Maria.
Hello, guys.
And in this episode, we're going to do something a little bit different where, I try to consume, and so does Maria, we try to consume a lot of little blog posts and articles and writings on the interweb related to design and creativity. And we thought that responding to articles every once in a while might be a good way to add some content to the podcast. And we're going to try that today with an article that was posted on Fast Company, which is about how visual designers can stay relevant in the post-screen world. Or we'd like to shorten it as the post-visual design world or post-visual design.
Kind of sounds like after the apocalypse in a way. But it's not an apocalypse. We're just evolving. We're getting to a point where our technology is so rapidly evolving that visual design and everything associated with it is as well.
Well, I think apocalyptic might be a good word, actually, only because I think a lot of younger designers especially might be really intimidated or scared that maybe some of the visual design skills that they're learning at school might not be relevant anymore. And not to give away too much of what we're going to talk about today away, but I think don't be worried. We're not saying that visual design is going away, but I think it's going to have competition. And we're going to bring up some points about that and how designers could expand their skill set and a lot more fun stuff. So, listen to some music for a little bit and get ready for the rest of the show. So I think the first thing to talk about with this episode or this idea of post-visual design is to define it and to kind of talk about what that is exactly. What is a design world where visual design is not as relevant? Maria, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that it's been a natural evolution and it is happening fairly quickly, but we really started to see the idea of a visual interface or graphic user interface start to happen when augmented reality came into the picture. And you're seeing things laid on top of the world around you. And so that vastly modifies the way you have to approach interface. Also things like iWatches and very small mobile tech like that.
So for maybe not all of our listeners might, they might not know what augmented reality is. So can you explain to our listeners what that might be?
I sure can. Augmented reality is when you overlay an interface or something computer generated over the user's view of the world around them. So, you know, you can see examples of that. I'd say one of the most popular examples of that is when you're using Google Glass, or I don't know if anyone still uses that, or even like using your cell phone and looking through the screen as it augments your reality.
Well, I actually think the best example is Pokemon Go. That's Excellent. Pretty much augmented reality in a nutshell. Yeah, I think that's the best example of augmented reality, just where we're using our devices to integrate directly with the real world. You know, when I think of, you know, a design world that's doesn't have much visual components involved in it, is like going back to that Fast Company article. It has something to do with, like, you know, Echo and Siri and, you know, chatbots, and basically a technology or tech world that doesn't have visuals. We're interacting with products now more and more that don't have a user or user visual interface. The interaction with the technology or the product is screenless.
It's so interesting how this has happened. In the article, they talk about, you know, the author is talking about an experience of having their hands full with their dog, and they rely on speaking into their headphones to Siri about listening to Green Day, and that it kind of hit them at that moment, like how weird that is. But it's a convenience thing. Like, we're busier than ever, and people want that very quick access to what they need to be done.
I think it's a very good point, and I think it brings up the point of user experience, in the sense where for the UX purists out there, it makes a lot of sense to start designing and thinking of products that are screenless, because in a lot of ways, like that example you just pointed out, it is way more convenient and more beneficial to the user to not have to interact with a visual of any kind.
This is true. And sometimes it's a little hard to like imagine being solely or mostly reliant on, let's say, like an artificial intelligence. That's kind of where we're going also, to basically be your personal assistant and do everything for you. Like you see in Iron Man, you know, he's got Jarvis, and Jarvis just does everything and calculates things and arranges meetings. And, you know, we kind of want like a little
Everyone wants a Jarvis.
Yeah, who the heck doesn't want a Jarvis? I mean, come on now. But he also turns into like a supreme like light being. I mean, I don't know if maybe eventually we'll evolve that way, but for now, we'll be okay with Siri.
Yeah, I think Siri is a good start. hopefully we'll all, like I said, get to the Jarvis level one day. But I think bringing up artificial intelligence is an interesting point, because that's happening right now, and it's affecting visual design right now, especially because, let's face it, especially when it comes to UI and interactive design and interaction design, it's homogenous. It is. I think we're all getting overly influenced by each other, and the design has still it's still beautiful, but as far as like layout and structure, it's homogenous. So we've talked about that before in other episodes, but I think that homogenous style, or just being homogenous, lends itself to AI being able to do some of the visual design jobs that they might not be able to do otherwise.
I'm going to mention evolution again here. To your point, it's interesting because at some point, a lot of things become homogenous in evolution, like with living beings. And some scientists predict that like the humans will become, our looks will become kind of homogenous. Like we won't be able to tell like what ethnicity we are, or what background we came from, and our looks will kind of even out because of all the mixing. And it's kind of like that with technology as well. Like we're kind of maxing out how sleek and minimalist you can make an interface. And the next step is to go beyond the interface. It's like, it's almost like this meta thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think so. I think Marie is bringing up a good point about evolution. It's kind of, and you know, kind of bringing together all races, and it's kind of already happening in design, and especially in digital design. So yeah, I think we've kind of defined what we're talking about in kind of post-visual design and what that might look like. So the article, to pivot and to move forward a little bit, the article talked about ways a visual designer could, can or could be, stay valuable or become valuable. You know, so if you're, you know, a designer still in school or you just started your career, these might be some things to think about as you try to grow and blossom as a designer or a creative professional in general. So the three main ones that we that the article covered was, you know, being more cross-disciplinary, learning to code, and being a problem solver. So I think we want to kind of tackle each one at a time, right? So I think the first one we want to dive into is problem solving, right, Maria? But, you know, before I let you talk here a little bit, I know I've been talking a lot right now. I want to say that problem solving should always be part of design as it is, but I think it's become more relevant and it's more in the spotlight because visual design is not as important as it used to be. That's just a theory, but that's kind of what I'm thinking. What do you think, Maria?
Definitely. That's why you're seeing, you know, people are starting to hear a lot more about like UX, for example, or user experience design. It's heavily psychology based and it's heavily like the study of human interaction and human predispositions and predicting human behavior, and really being interested in the research behind things. And that's how you optimize anything. And actually our last podcast, our guest Jeb Banner talked about that, how you optimize things with design thinking. And so you have to be a really good problem solver. And thankfully now that you doing interfaces that are highly visual now, you have to be a good problem solver. But you're going almost into like a more, like it feels more abstract. And it's really not, it's just a different way of applying that kind of similar philosophy. I think it's a pleasant challenge actually, kind of go beyond the obvious, like beautiful things that, you know, like the author states, like Dribbble has kind of blown up.
I think that's a very good point, because I think the idea or the mentality of design school and younger designers, for the most part, now there's some great schools that are differentiating themselves a little bit, but for the most part, design schools and art schools are training you to make beautiful things. And I'm not criticizing that at all. I was trained or educated to attempt to do that as well. And there's relevance in that, and there's importance to that, to making things beautiful and functional. But I think sometimes in design school or even post-design school, what gets lost is the thinking and the problem solving that needs to take place in a good design process. And again, because visual design is now not going away, but now sharing the room with other aspects of design, now design thinking and problem solving is way more important than it used to be. Because, you know, back in the day, the designer just had to focus on, for the most part, just making things look good and communicate well, you know, visually. Now there's so much more to design than that, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, you're having to think through so many different interactions approaching, like normally you have to think about that when you're doing, like, say, like you're designing a user interface. But when you're taking out the screen, it has to feel even more natural than ever. Like you really have to capture the essence of human thought patterns in such a pure form that it feels like seamless, like the user doesn't even almost realize that they're having to rely on something else. Like it feels like an extension of their consciousness.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think knowing the whole human journey or every human interaction with the brand you're working with or the product you're working with, I think it has always been vital. But again, it's all amplified now. It's all much more important than it used to be, you know, because it's not just for a poster or a website anymore. It's a whole entire experience. You know, so I know the word user experience or experience gets thrown around a lot in the design and creative community, but I think there's some actual substance or truth to those, you know, trendy words. Like it's not just a trend. I think good designers should become experienced designers and just think about every little interaction with the project that they're working with.
I agree. And again, this is going to become so seamless with our everyday lives that like the implications of it are powerful, because people will be heavily relying on this way of approaching an interface far more than a visual designers have ever dealt with, because again, it's becoming part of your consciousness. So you might be eventually talking to an AI, having it, set up a complex tasks for you, and it needs to function at a very, very high level in order to achieve that successfully.
Yeah, totally. And that just makes me think of something. Don't be scared of AI. If you're a designer, be excited for it. Think, okay, cool. Like this is how I'm thinking. Cool. I get to, instead of designing a visual component, which I still might have to do, of course, I also now get to design maybe the artificial intelligence that's part of the overall experience of the product, project, or brand that I'm working with. You know, so it's like we don't have to be afraid of chatbots and Siri and the grid, you know, that's the AI thing that makes the websites. You know, we don't have to be afraid of those things. Let's just embrace it and make it part of the overall experience. You know, so I think that's kind of one thing the article is getting at. Be cross-disciplinary. And, you know, for me, I think that means, you know, business strategy in general, design strategy, design thinking is what we're talking about, right? So visuals, don't make visuals the center stage, just make it part of the overall show. I think, you know, to use that metaphor, I think a major difference now is that the visual design was the star of the show, and now it's just part of the overall scene. And when it comes to designing quality products or brands or experiences.
Yeah, the next step is basically to enhance humanity's brain power, because you're going to be designing experiences that free up the human mind to do more powerful things, because you're not worrying about picking your stuff up from the dry cleaner or scheduling when the nanny's going to come, you know, or ordering your grocery or going out, you know, going shopping for your groceries. Like all that can be done in a matter of seconds or minutes, and you can focus on much higher level stuff. So I think this is a really important step in to be a part of, and it should be a sense of pride. And in a way, and this is not to give anyone a God complex, but you're going to be creating other entity, basically, like a being, like a digital being, you're going to be a part of that. And so you have to be cross-disciplinary in order to achieve this, and look at it as a great experience to interact with so many amazing people in different fields that you maybe normally would have never really had limited or no interaction with.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think you bring up a great point that in today's, you know, design room or war room, when they're coming up with ideas, it's not just designers anymore. It's not just even content writers or copywriters. It's like you could get like a developer, a designer, a strategist, a copywriter, like who knows what. Like Marie, you have some, who else would be in that room? What do you think?
Well, I see us working more closely with a lot of different types of engineers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And usually, like, and it's a misnomer, like people think like engineers are so far removed from like visual designers, but really it's a beautiful harmony if you can learn to work together really well with engineers, because those are the people who are going to be actually like really building the basis for us to build our platforms on. And so, you know, I think this is almost like a unity thing, like the world is going towards unity, I think, but also like and harmony, and but also disciplines are going towards harmony, because everybody was in their own little box for so many years, and now we're really starting to become unified, maybe respect each other more and expand our perspectives that way.
Absolutely. And I think the point Maria is trying to make, I think the main point we're trying to cover here for this particular segment, is that the biggest piece of advice I could give to designers so far, you know, since I've graduated from, you know, design school or, you know, getting my degree at a university. Again, the biggest piece of advice is learn more than just visual design. Don't focus on just the aesthetics. You know, I feel like I've grown a lot, but not so much as a visual designer, where, yeah, maybe I've improved there as well. but I feel like I've learned a lot and I've improved as a design thinker and in a strategic thinker, and you know, using my design skills to tackle business problems. And I would recommend that anyone that wants to be a designer should get excited about those things as well, because I think they're only getting, those kind of things are going to get more relevant rather than less in the coming years and decades.
I 100% agree with you. And, you know, have the philosophy that nothing is beneath you to understand, because the way the future is going with what we're talking about here, you know, you're going to need to have an appreciation for the most mundane of tasks all the way up to the most complex. So it's just changing. It's like a whole philosophical shift and psychological shift. And speaking of cross-disciplinary, if you happen to be anywhere in like neurology or psychology, this would be a really, if you're not feeling like going down the typical path, this is a good time to get into all this stuff, because it's very valuable.
I completely agree. I think some of the best UX designers, you know, all over the world, they didn't spend a day in design school. They're psychologists or neurologists or anthropologists, etc. So, you know, just to reinforce the point, being cross-disciplinary, I think, is vital. I think it always has been, but now it's more important, maybe more important than ever. And kind of on the subject, on a similar subject to cross-disciplinary, or kind of a good transition into another topic that was brought up in this article, was the idea of learning to code. Like, designers must learn to code. And I know that this is such an epic debate, you know, in the design community and the development community, because do you code? Do you not code? Is that only for developers? Or should designers learn to be, you know, full stack? In other words, should they be designing and developing products? I'm on the fence, to be honest. I know the basics of coding, and I think that's valuable. I actually have compared it to modern day typing, and Maria knows this. Like, you know, back in the day, you had to, like, you were employable if you knew how to type, basically, right? In the 50s, 60s, whatever. And now I feel like coding is becoming the same thing. Like, if you know how to code, there's a very good chance you know, you're going to have a job, you're employable. So I believe in coding. But I also, at the same time, do believe that, you know, a designer should, if anything, if they want to learn anything outside the basic visuals and, you know, design theory, would be business and business strategy and marketing. So that's just my personal opinion. You know, Maria, how do you feel about designers knowing how to code?
I'm not going to lie to you guys. Like, hardcore coding kind of scares the crap out of me. It's not my strength.
It's a language. It's a different language for sure.
No, I mean, you know, basic stuff is fine, but like hardcore stuff, not my strength. I think sometimes it can be, I don't think you can be like super good at everything. Like, so it kind of puts a lot of pressure to be like full stack. I mean, it's pretty hard to be really a really solid person in all those areas. But I do think you should definitely know moderate amount of code for sure, if you can, because why not? That's where the future is going. And the author says it connects you more to the thing you're building, which I think is 100% right on.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, you know, brings me back to the T scale. We've talked about that before, where I think coding should be part of that T scale. It might not be your special, special skill. It might not be what you're most known for. It might not be your expertise, but I think if you have it in your wheelhouse, at least to a certain extent, I think it's really beneficial. You know, so, you know, I work at a digital studio where we're dealing with a lot of code, and we have a great development team. So I personally am not coding day in, day out, but, you know, just being able to read and understand on a basic level HTML, CSS, some backend languages, just helps me kind of navigate around certain things that I might not be able to handle otherwise. So I think knowing the basics of coding is valuable, And this is advice for myself just as much as anybody else. You know, if you're feeling a little rusty, there's like Code Academy. I know General Assembly has a site as well where you can kind of do these free basic coding lessons. I mean, maybe doing it once every few months can really help you.
I think that's really good advice. Just something kind of crossed my mind, though. Since we're talking about like the future being here now, who's to say that you'll need to actually know that much code? I feel like code is getting more automated. Like there's major libraries of so much code because people have already come up with so much. So maybe you don't need to learn how to code that much in the near future.
Oh, that's a mind-blowing point that might lead to a debate.
Ooh.
Because I respectfully disagree. And I think because there's more like an increase of a variance of technology, that there will be more of a necessity to code, in the sense where, like, if we're building these visual less or minimal visual devices and technology pieces and tools, I feel that how it works and how it functions is more important than less important, and how it's being coded and programmed is more vital than not, right?
I agree, but I feel like the things that are most important is the higher level programming, which goes into like software engineering. So regular visual designers, like it would be very difficult for them to transition from being a graphic or visual designer all the way to like a software engineer level, because the algorithms and are what really makes good machine learning. That is something that is extremely high level. And as far as like more simple stuff that realistically transitioning as a visual designer, I feel like the high level stuff that's going to make it a smooth interaction is going to be more software engineer.
So you're kind of basically saying like front end coding.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Going by the wayside. Well, I mean, that's a fairly valid point, in the sense where you're seeing more and more like do it yourself websites and like Squarespace and Wix, et cetera, kind of coming out there, and you can build a website, you know, without knowing a line of code. So I think that's a valid point, but I don't think that's going away at the same time.
I don't think it's going to go away completely. I just think that the importance on certain types of coding are going to shift. So since we're not dealing with like, oh, like, you know, when you tap on this, this effect happens, or like, you know, when you swipe, this happens. Instead, it's going to be like all like a machine listening to you and learning your brain patterns, basically. So if you're not dealing with visual stuff, I feel like that type of coding is going to have to be much higher level, to the point where it's out of our normal realm of, you know, our scope.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not saying like you're wrong and I'm right. I'm just saying, like, I think there's a different point of view. But I do agree in the sense where, because of what you're saying, again, it goes back to my belief that a designer should maybe focus on business acumen and becoming a design strategist, or focusing on problem solving first. Not to say that developers don't problem solve, because I honestly believe they do. You know, they put out the fires that I start a lot. You know, so I give our development team a lot of credit. But that being said, you know, maybe a designer should be focusing more on the strategy and problem solving.
Think of it more like an architect and civil engineer, structural engineer relationship. So you're going to be the architect.
That's a pretty good metaphor.
Yeah, so. Because like I said a million times, I come from the architecture school of thought, and you know, we design and we do a lot of research. This is normal for us. Like, it's heavy research, and then at the end, that's when you design something. But still, even after you design something, you have to work it out with the civil engineer. But see, if the civil engineer were to design it, it may be clunky, or people might trip over it, or actually might decimate in a wildlife system. So it's that harmony where you're checking each other. It's like a checks and balances. So think of yourself as evolving into like an architect of AI, like what would be the most natural thing. And then the programmers, you know, the software engineers are going to figure out like to make the robust algorithms and really incredible machine learning to incorporate that architecture that you've presented.
Yeah, no, I think that's a, like I said, that's a really excellent metaphor. And to me, I think what you're saying is just, again, be cross-disciplinary. I think, again, we're not saying that code, not code. I think that's silly. I think you could have a basic understanding of code and coding without being an expert at it and being able to build something from scratch. I will be honest with you that I think that should, I think coding should be mandatory in school today, the way learning how to type was when I was going through school. You know, I just think, I think it's becoming more and more vital to learn. But, you know, not everyone uses typing as the main component of their job, even though they might know how to do it. I mean, that's changing more and more, obviously. So I guess I see this, I see the same thing with coding, that even though you might not, coding might not be a major part of what you do, but knowing it doesn't hurt.
You know, when you're young, your brain is like a super sponge, and that's the time to like get the seed going, because just like, you know, reversing expectations of a client that you've built a certain relationship with and then you're trying to change it, it's much harder to do later down the line. Your brain is much more rigid and you're less open to like certain abstract types of thinking. But when you're a kid, everything is so, is like just incredible. The way you learn is so potent. So if I would definitely say, if you have kids and, you know, you're anticipating the future, now is definitely the time to get them into coding.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And at the same time, though, I don't think it's ever too late to pick that stuff up. Like, I picked it up a little later than most, I would say, age-wise, and by no means an expert at coding, but like, it's, I'm not intimidated by it like Maria said she is. I feel that if I really were to spend a lot of time, you know, focusing on it, I could get a lot better at it to the point where I could probably build some things completely 100% on my own. That being said, like I said, we have A, I've been fortunate enough to work with great developers, and B, I've personally decided to really focus, besides obviously visual design, focus on design strategy and the business of design. I feel that that's something I've kind of focused on, and how design can help business and help a startup or a business grow. And but that's just me. I think if you're a designer that says, hey, you know, I'm not really interested in the business stuff, so I want to kind of get better at coding, I think that's a great route to take too. The point is, don't just be a visual designer,
but also don't lose sight of your strengths. Like, if you feel like you're really forcing yourself to go into something and it's just not clicking for you, Try the other facet of it. There's so many facets to get into. It's not just like so cut and dry, like coding or psychology. There's a lot of different ways you can harness your natural skills to get into this and transition. So yeah, don't be discouraged by anything we're saying, like about coding and all that.
Oh yeah, no, that's my point. Yeah, I mean, there's not just like two options besides like visual design. You know, I'm just naming like the two I could think of that I personally interacted with the most, which is A, coding, or B, you know, business strategy. You know, so there's a lot of other ways you could grow as a designer that kind of you tack on to your core, which is visual design. So like, to bring up another metaphor, like your tree trunk, the center of your tree is visual design. There's a lot of other branches you could go down where visual design is still at your core. I'm just mentioning a couple.
Well, I agree. The future for this kind of technology and this shift in what we're doing as visual designers is going to hold so many possibilities. We may not even be able to fully like imagine how many different areas it's going to tap into. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how many more skills can be utilized from all areas of design and creativity.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is kind of the main overarching point that kind of covers all of this. Like, don't stop learning and don't contain yourself within visual design and what looks good at. And this is not that new of a concept. And I think that's kind of an overall theme, where good designers have always learned about other things and tried to pick up on other things outside of their, you know, core discipline or outside of their major. You know, like my first teacher always recommended us to go to a university rather than a private art school, in the sense where we would have to take other classes that were not design related or weren't art related. So we could just learn about different things and different cultures and different professions even.
That goes back to studying the way humans act and think and are. And something that's difficult for a lot of designers is we tend to be kind of introverted. Not all of us, but, you know, a lot of creatives in general tend to be kind of introverted. And so, but something that's going to be like a huge bonus is if you're able to really understand the human condition and just getting yourself out there and meeting people and analyzing what works in their lives and what doesn't. You don't have to be like super awkward about it. It's just like a subtle observation, you know, everywhere you're going, like people are paying for things at the register, or when people are typing in their phones or whatever, you know, if they're complaining about how they keep losing something like their keys, you know, and what ways work for them. So just things like that, being really, really aware and really empathetic are really going to be great skills as we go into this next realm of possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, listening to you, I was thinking about like, it just, a lot of the times, if not all the time, it goes back to problem solving. You know, what problems do you want to solve? And that's like the startup world in a nutshell right now. That's why there's been this kind of boom in design thinking and strategy and all this gold rush of startups, and the whole San Francisco scene has all been built on problem solving, right? I mean, Uber, Airbnb, like those are the first two that come to mind for most people, right? They thought, and rightfully so, they thought they were solving a problem. You know, so that's a huge reason why designers are valued more today than maybe they ever have been. You know, and I know we were kind of getting away from the post-visual topic, but I think it's kind of tied back in to the sense where if you're worried about what you're going to do, if visuals aren't important and you're a graphic designer or a designer, just remember, if you're good at problem solving, you will always find employment. You will always find a place to work.
This is true. And it's interesting to think on another kind of, another way of thinking about visual design, I guess I'm trying to say, is that all we're doing as designers and creatives, we're just like mimicking what already exists. Like we're already just mimicking what's in our natural environment. Or in our man-made environments. So it's going to eventually go back to, like, for example, augmented reality, where you're just having like very minimal graphics overlaid on the actual real environment instead of us constantly trying to simulate it. So visual is going to be very important. And this is going to take you into a whole other area, because then you have to figure out how to make everything look great over any kind of scenery. That's like unlimited visual challenges there, which, so it's not, it's just changing the way we think of visual.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that leads to one of our final points, probably not the last point, that visual design is not going away. And Maria is kind of bringing that up. And, you know, I think the major comparison along this point is that, you know, how many times have we as creative people thought that, you know, print is dead, print is dead? How many times have we heard that print design is gone, yet it's still here and it's not going away anytime soon? Now it's sharing space with, and it's probably has a smaller piece of the pie because of, you know, digital design and UI and web design for sure, you know, but now all that's going to happen is now UI and web design will have to make room for, you know, the new kind of design that involves more experience and screenless interaction. So it's just another person coming to the party, rather than, you know, getting kicked out or having to go away. So you just have to learn how to kind of, you know, as a visual designer, share the room a little bit, right?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we've seen this historically where stuff like, you could never imagine probably like not having like a Walkman or like one of those portable CD players or CDs or whatever, right? But now it's like everything is virtual and MP3. And, but the stuff, other stuff becomes like novelty items after so many years, after designing hand lettering is coming back as like a novelty item, like print is coming back as like more novelty. Like, so I think these things will come back as novelty items. And I'm not trying to degrade printing at all, because it still has a lot of importance in today's society. But in the future, it's going to be more of a novelty item, I see, because it companies who are creating all these goods that we still get, you know, in the mail and all that, are going to realize it's more financially feasible to do everything digitally.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you're just making me think of all these things, Maria. I mean, I think you're really bringing up some good points. And I was just thinking, you know, the one thing we always have to realize what's coming is change. That's guaranteed 100%. And if we're not ready to handle it, then, you know, we're not going to survive in general, not just in our creative professions. You know, we have to be ready to adapt, because that's the one constant, basically, or one of the few constants in life is change. You know, so, you know, print was the major form of communication for a very long time, and now it hasn't been completely replaced, but now we're transitioning into digital communication, and now we're talking about how that's eventually going to get replaced too. And it doesn't mean that designers are going away. It's just their role within the new community, the new economy, and the new world is changing. And this kind of brings me up to a side point that we didn't plan to talk about, but we've talked about this before, is that also something to keep in mind is that the globalization of our economy has changed how we produce, you know, visual content, and, you know, what it's for and how much we get paid for it. And that's something to keep in mind too.
That's a really excellent point. Yeah, not only does it affect how much designers get paid, but it also affects the speed and efficiency of communicating with people all the way across, you know, another end of the planet. And that's another interesting thing, is because, you know, remember in the old days when you'd have to like call and pay extra to talk to someone in another country, or you had to ship something and it could take like many weeks to get there. And still does, but like, you know, everything's becoming so virtual now. You can make friends with someone in a hot second who is all the way in another country. So everything is becoming more intermingled, and I'd be really curious to see in the near future how this continues to affect the rates and the structures in which designers charge for, and how we do business as designers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's volatile, it's fluid, and, you know, there's no clear right or wrong answer to that idea of what we're charging and, you know, how we're, you know, getting value for what, you know, what we do. And we've talked about this before, so I don't think we want to dive too deeply into that. But I will say that, you know, how we could tie it back into post-visual design is that the more value you could create outside of visual production, the more valuable, you know, the more you'll get paid, and the more employable you'll become.
I totally agree. So, it's just about adapting, and throughout our history as human beings, the most adaptable people survived, and their families survived, and their genetics continued. And so it's kind of a similar thing. You just have to be in your career, you have to be very adaptable. And if you're a business owner who happens to be listening to this, you have to adapt, and you have to accept that this is where we're going. And this is the kind of goods you're going to need. So it's very interesting. This is going to affect everybody. And so now's a good time to start to relax a little and just let it happen. Just roll, just kind of roll with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, I think have an open mind, right? And go with the flow, and kind of if the creative community and the creative economy is going one way, you don't fight it. You know, go with it a little bit. You know, I trust me, I did not plan to be focusing on branding and UX UI when I graduated from school. I mean, if anyone knows me, I was the, you know, I'm going to make posters and illustrations and fun stuff. And I'm not saying I still have fun, don't get me wrong, but I was making totally different stuff than I'm making now. And, you know, just because I'm going with the flow, and, you know, I'm asking myself, how can I create value for my clients, and how can I solve my clients' problems? You know, if there's a situation where I need to make something fun again, or make an illustration or a creative poster, then I'm all for it. I definitely love doing that. But, you know, I want to make sure I'm creating a positive return on investment when I make stuff, you know, for my clients. And that's just something to think about.
Yep. This is, like I said, affecting everything, including how you do business and how you interact with your clients. And this is going to be another thing, you know, creatives out there interacting with clients, how they're going to take this, how to communicate these new and quickly evolving paths that we have to take, and showing them this value. And this is going to get harder and harder, as I said before, as it continues to get more like meta, you know, because like, especially business owners have been around for a while. They've had their business for like at least 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. They're going to be totally confused by what's going on right now. And it's going to take a lot of teaching and patience, because this is getting pretty crazy pretty quickly.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But I think there's a simple solution for that, which is, you know, just don't forget that part of your job as a designer or a creative professional is to educate and partner with your client or your collaborators, and not in like a snobby, oh, I am the designer and I know everything. It's not like that. It's just like, you know, they're experts at their business, and it's their job to educate you as the creative on their business, whatever that business is. And it's your job as a creative to do the same thing for them when it comes to your business, which is, you know, creativity and or branding or marketing or design or photography or whatever it is that you do. You're the expert at that. So there needs to be a kind of transaction of knowledge. I think the most successful projects I've worked with is when that transaction has taken place. I've learned a lot about that business, and my clients learned a lot about my business. And going back to the topic, you know, that should be a staple of what you do, no matter how visual your creative project is when you're interacting with a client.
Man, that's I totally agree with everything you just said. It's never ending learning and teaching, and being willing to learn so much from everybody you're working with, everybody you meet. And that's going to just create like a more unified experience overall between interactions between human beings and interactions between humans and artificial intelligence, let's say. And, you know, everything's going to continue to go faster and faster. People want things easy. And now that we've gotten a taste of what easy feels like, we just want everything to be as easy as possible. We want to do as minimal thinking as we possibly can to achieve maximum, return. So now we almost have like this greed right now for easy things. So it's just going to be an insane process over the next 5-10 years watching this transition. I mean, allegedly, like, the next iPhone's going to be like something we've never seen, or like something pretty out there compared to what we're used to. Because it's like, how many times can you remodel like a box, like this little box that you put in your pocket? You know, you really, people want more all the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the point is that innovation is coming, and we don't always know what it is, and we just have to be prepared for anything. It could stay visual. I mean, I think there's a good chance that it could get more visual when it comes to design and the creative economy. So while I thought this was an interesting article, I don't think it's, you know, a set in stone prophecy, but it's an interesting point of view and just something to think about as you continue to grow in your design career. You know, so it could go, yeah, we could get more screens. It could be like Minority Report, right? Where there's a screen for everything, you know, or we go, yeah, the direction where we're losing screens and we're losing, you know, visual content. So my point is as we wrap up here, that it could go either way. We should just be prepared and ready to adapt, and we can't be afraid to think outside the box, and we can't limit ourselves to one specific role. I think if we do things like maybe learning how to code, like we said, or learning about business strategy and brand strategy, or anything like that, if we just make ourselves more versatile, we're going to make ourselves more valuable, and we'll be able to handle a visual rich society or visually barren society.
I agree. It's just the key is just to keep adapting no matter what direction we end up going in. And, you know, eventually technology is going to be part of our human genome, basically. Like, we're already becoming one with technology, but we might physically become one with technology sooner than we think. So the key is just to stay flexible and to always learn. Don't stop learning. And, you know, we hope to do more episodes like this. Sometimes we just get really tickled by something we read, and it just takes us on this whole path of thought.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're always keeping an eye out for what's being written out there and said out there. So, you know, we'll, hopefully find something, you know, that we could tackle again pretty soon.
And if you guys have any suggestions for something you read that you're like, oh man, you guys need to really talk about this, then please email us at hello@creativehoney.org.
So there you have it. Hopefully now the post-visual design world does not sound as apocalyptic as it did maybe at the beginning of the show. And hopefully our discussion helped you think about something new about your design or creative career. So, yeah.
Well, we really hope you guys enjoyed this topic today. I know we really enjoyed talking about it. I think we got a little brain workout here. So, we really appreciate you guys listening.
Yeah, and, the idea for talking about this article was kind of spurned by, you know, some comments that were left on the Facebook share that I did for this article. So I want to thank my design buddies that from school that chipped in to the conversation and kind of get the wheels turning for us. So yeah, you know, so if you guys keep doing that, or anyone else keeps doing that with anything I share on, you know, my Facebook or Creative Honey's Facebook, same thing with Maria, I mean, that gives us opportunity to talk about something. So we love when, you know, we get to kind of talk about design, right? Talk about creativity. We love doing it, and that's why we're doing this in the first place. Ugh. Yeah.
I know, I'm getting some tongue twisting going on today too. But no, we just really enjoy this, and we look forward to posting more interviews, more conversational episodes. We like to get a little philosophical sometimes. But if you would like to hear more of what we have, definitely visit our iTunes. You can find us just by typing in Creative Honey. You can also find us on Stitcher or SoundCloud, or really any place that you can listen to podcasts like Overcast, etc. Also, you can check out our blog, creativehoney.org. There we also post little blog posts in accordance with the podcast, and a link to the SoundCloud, so you can listen there as well. You can follow us on Instagram at Creative Honey. You can follow us on Twitter at Creative Honey _ and Facebook, which is at Creative Honey Media.
So we're all over. We're all over the interwebs for sure. So definitely find us there. And you can also find us individually, right, Maria?
You sure can. For me, you can go to my website, mariabuyukos.com. My last name is spelled Bouyugiouks. You can also find me on LinkedIn with that name. You can go to my Dribbble and find me under that name. But I always say the easiest way to find me is on my personal Instagram, which is at Maria_Fofia.
Awesome. And you can find me at two places. The first one is Active Color, where I work as a designer and strategist. I also have a website that just basically acts as a hub to all of my social media accounts at zrhill.com. You can find me on Dribbble, Instagram, and Twitter, and Facebook. And most of my handles, I believe, are Zachary R. Hill. I'm using my full name on social media. That's where you can find me.
Thank you so much again for listening, guys. We really appreciate the support. And don't forget, if you're really digging this, go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review.
Absolutely. It really helps us grow, both the blog and the podcast. So we'd love to hear from you and get your support. So until next time, thanks for listening and see you soon.